Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gaberti, and this is the podcast for entrepreneurs who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. Every day presents a new opportunity to grow our businesses. While some tactics result in minimal growth, there are other approaches that lead to rapid growth. In this episode, you'll learn how to achieve that level of growth for your own business. Today's guest is a business growth expert, mentor, and entrepreneur. He built three multi-million dollar businesses before turning 40, has mentored the launch of over 5,000 businesses, and has trained and certified over 7,000 business coaches in 35 countries. Carl has written three best-selling books on business strategy and growth. Today's guest for episode 106 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Carl Gold. Carl, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, Mark, how you doing? Thanks so much for having me, and I appreciate a chance to connect with your audience.
Carl, it is such a pleasure to have you on the Breakthrough Success Podcast, and I'm really looking forward to diving into how we can expand our growth and our businesses, but I'd love to get some backstory first. So why did you become an entrepreneur?
Well, I think I probably, no matter what story I'm about to tell you, I think I probably would have ended up there anyway, because I think it's kind of in my DNA. But I was going to school, I was going to college for accounting and finance, and I broke my leg pretty badly in my second year, and I had to leave school. And 6 months later, no money, no place, you know, living at home, I said, you know what, I need to start making a living, and I didn't want to just have a job. I've had plenty of those. And so I wanted to start something that was going to be long lasting. And I knew about landscaping because I had done it. I grew up in construction. So I started a landscaping company and thought I would give it a try, see if I had what it took. And that business doubled each year in its first 6 years before I sold it. So I realized, you know what, this entrepreneurial thing's for me. I can do this. I can do it well. And, you know, I got my first lesson at 18. So there I was out there trying to make it happen in my own business.
It's really great to see that you started thinking this way at a young age. And I know people say that to me, but I love seeing anyone thinking that being an entrepreneur at a young age and being able to pursue your dreams, because age is we should not limit ourselves based on age. Age is not a limit to success. And I really love hearing how people were able to start off. And since then, you've been able to develop a lot of skills. You've mentored so many people. But in all of your experience, what do you believe is the most critical skill that business owners need to master in order to thrive today?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a couple ways to answer that. And knowing the focus of your audience is the younger entrepreneur, the emerging entrepreneur, in the beginning, you have to have just what I would call stupid persistence. Like you've literally eradicated the word no out of your language. You don't hear the word, you don't respond to the word. It doesn't have a meaning. And you just have to have the ability to just relentlessly pursue your idea, tweak it. I'm not saying be unintelligent about this, even though I used the word stupid already. But the idea here is that whatever you're about to do, you're going to have to overcome a tremendous amount of negative reinforcement. You know, when I wanted to start my business, someone else said, what are you kidding me? You're going to school for accounting. You should become an accountant. It's nice and safe and secure. And most people want to keep you secure. So in the beginning, you need to have that ability to blast through all of the no's, and you will get a lot of them. Number two, you need to be able to sell and market your idea. If you cannot be a person of persuasion early on as a critical skill, by the way, that'll last ongoing. You're not going to make it as an entrepreneur, because no matter what business you get into, be well aware that you are in the sales and marketing business, no matter what your product is. And you have to be constantly, relentlessly marketing the message of your business. And if you don't, someone's going to run right past you. Just look no further than BlackBerry, and you'll get the lesson right there. And you have to be willing to be bold and differentiate yourself in a way where you really stand out. Your goal in the beginning is to become a unicorn. Even if you're in a commoditized industry, you've got to become the unicorn of that niche. And so you've got to, you, and that takes a certain amount of, you know, intestinal fortitude, and you've got to be willing to, you know, being in your own business, especially in the beginning, is like writing your own eHarmony ad and then saying it to everybody who will listen. You know, well, what's about me? Well, let me tell you about what I'm doing and what my business is and why should you care? You have to, in the beginning, you just have to be very persistent and persuasive with that. Now, once you, we call that group of entrepreneurs the entrepreneur who wants to make it. They want to make something of themselves, Mark. But then at some point, you're going to reach a certain amount of your goals. You're going to hit it. You're going to hustle your way to a comfortable revenue and income amount. And then you're going to say, wow, I have something pretty good here. I don't want to screw it up. And so we have the I want to make it entrepreneur. And then we have the long haul. I don't want to screw it up entrepreneur. If you're the I don't want to screw it up entrepreneur, you have to master the art of letting go and delegating to other people. You have to be able to empower others to others to be the star. That's number one. Number two, you have to have a systems and process paradigm of and way of thinking. Everything becomes a process once you have hit a certain level and you want to have a sustainable company. You go to the bathroom, there's a process for that. You turn the alarm on, there's a process for that. You shut your computer off, there's a process for that. I mean, literally, it's like the playbook at a football game. That ball does not snap without everybody knowing all the plays, right? And there's a way to run every single play. And then number three is the same one as the early on is, you have to be a person of persuasion that just never ends. That and you can't automate it. You can't make it, you know, you can't make it perfectly efficient. There's always going to be that part where you're going to have to be the ambassador of the brand, and that just never ends. And so if you can, as the entrepreneur, you can wrap your head around both sets of characteristics and you're willing to take those on, then you'll be very, very successful as an entrepreneur. You're not willing to take any one of those on, you're not going to make it. You'll be working for somebody after too long.
Carl, thank you for sharing those great skills that we need to develop. I mean, it's really important with the persistence. Like, there are so many entrepreneurs who can relate to, you know, their ideas getting rejected before they had all their clout. All the different hurdles that they have to go through to this day. And it happens whether you're a newbie or you're someone who's made it, you are still have to use that persistence to get through the initial downturns and the ones that keep coming up. And I'd like to focus more on the entrepreneur who's trying to make it. So with that in mind, I'm wondering if you could share with us some of your top growth hacks for expanding our businesses.
Sure. So one of the first lessons I got, I'm so grateful for it because I got it very early on in my career, was when I started my landscaping company, I went out on my first three appointments and I won. I got all three. I was 3 for 3. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, wow, I must be good at landscaping. Like, holy crap. I thought I was going to be an accountant. I was going to be a finance. Oh, man. Screw that. I'm in landscaping, baby. Look out, you know? And I had such tremendous early success. I thought, like, well, maybe this is my calling. Like, I must just, forget this whole pushing, you know, paperwork and in an office. I should be out here doing this. And so my father says to me, hey, Carl, why don't you go back to the people who hired you and ask them why they did it? So that way, you know what the reason was that convinced them. And the number one overwhelmingly majority answer I got was that, Carl, you were the one who showed up. That's why you got the job. And I thought, really? Like, that was the reason? They're like, well, yeah, we called 5 of you people and three of you called back and only you were the only one. You all promised a proposal and a return visit, but you were the only one who came back. So we gave you the job. And I realized, holy cow, I if I show up, that I'm beating a lot of my competitors just by answering the phone call and showing up. So one of the growth hacks I found very early on was I listened to all the complaints that I heard all of my first year. And the next year, I took the complaints, I took the objections and the complaints. Everybody was telling me about contractors. You contractors don't call up, call back, you're not responsive. You tell me one thing and you promise me one thing, you do another. You can never guarantee an end finish time. You can never guarantee a price. I just took the top five complaints and I rolled it into my business plan and I made a promise. These five things, I'm sorry if you had to deal with this with other contractors. I promise you, you will never have to deal with this for me, with me, if you're my client. And they're like, wow. But I charged a high premium. And even though, Mark, this was at a time when the economy was struggling, especially real estate was down, I was charging ultra premium rates and nobody else could figure out why I was getting these rates. I even had somebody sit me down, lecture me. They told me my pricing was obnoxious. That's what they said to me. 5 minutes later, they hired me. I couldn't believe it. I walked out of there. I'm like, what just happened? But here's what I learned. I learned that if you handle the top pain points of your prospects, they'll pay almost anything for it. And the person who even answers the ad, who even reads the blog and says, yeah, that's me, I'm mad about that too, they're a passionate buyer and they will pay a premium for the intangibles. As a matter of fact, they'll pay more for the intangibles sometimes than they will the utility of the product or the service. So that was one of my growth hacks right from the start. Number one, raise your prices. Anyone who's listening right now, I'll give you a formula for how much you can raise your prices right now. So I'm going to throw out a number. You tell me what percentage of your current clientele would abandon you because your prices are too high. So if you went out right now across the board and raised your prices 1%, what percentage of your clientele would abandon you? And if the answer is zero, then raise your prices 1% now. If the price is, so if I say 3%, how many would abandon you? You say, well, none. Great, raise them 3%, 4%, 5%, 7%. 10%. I don't know what the number is, depending on your business. For some of you, it's a 0.25%. But whatever the number is, if you come up with a number, that means your clientele loves you for something other than your product or service, the utility of the product or service. That means they like the fact that you're responsive or professional, or you're just nice, or you're a community person, or you're a man, or you're a woman, or you support a certain cause, or you like to take care of your local community, or you like to take care of the international community. I don't know. But they will align with something you're doing that's intangible and be willing to pay more for it. You find out what those are. You charge an ultra premium price. And you know you're charging the right price when people say, oh, God, that's a lot. But I do want to figure out a way for us to work together. You hear that response, you know you've priced yourself accurately.
And I love how you, you're not just saying these tactics, you're giving an indicator of whether you're able to implement the tactic properly. And it's really interesting how you take the complaints and use those to create a different product or service that addresses those complaints. And high prices is definitely something people are shy of. I don't think I'll ever have a story like that where someone's talking about your prices and then hires you 5 minutes later. But it is incredible that you could charge high premiums and still attract customers and then spend more time addressing those customers.
Mark, here's a perfect example. Is a Tesla automobile expensive? Think about that for a second. Some people would say yes. Oh my God, that's over $100,000 for a car. But what other car in the market does what is the Tesla competitor? And the answer is they don't have one. There's nobody out there right now that has a comparable car to a Tesla. Now, there's other battery operated cars. I'm not saying that. But luxury sport coupes, how many are there out there? And the answer is none. So is a Tesla expensive? Well, if I have nothing to compare it to, I can't answer the question. We might find out that another car company comes along and says, holy crap, I can't do a Tesla can for anything under $300,000. And you're going to say, wow, Tesla, good deal. Or somebody builds a car and says, what are you talking about, guys? We could do this for $75,000. And you're like, they've been ripping us off. But right now, we don't know. And that's why, and what all Tesla did was they took every complaint about a battery car and they put it into one and they charge the heck out of it. And we all run around saying these things are unbelievable. And think about it. How many people do you know bought a Rolex or bought a Tesla and then complained about the price?
None. Not many.
They bragged about it. Do you have any idea what I – because they saved up for it. You know, think about it. Who needs a $1,000 watch, let alone a $5,000 to $10,000 watch, right? And all it does is tell time and date.
Yeah.
But people will save up because it's a status symbol for them, and they'll pay, you know, a couple hundred dollars for the timepiece, but then they'll pay $5,000 for the status.
And lots of word of mouth, too, for the brand.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, because we're talking about it now, you know? So, it's an interesting dynamic in that you are perceived, your quality is parallel to your pricing. And if you are high, here's how it works. If you are among the highest price or among the lowest price in your niche, you're thought of as an expert. If you are anything in the middle, you are thought of as just noise and your quality is thought of as low. Because if you were good, you would charge more, you would charge less. Well, you wouldn't be in the middle like everybody else.
That's an interesting way. Yeah, I mean, I never thought of it that way, but it makes total sense now.
Think about it. Google has over, 80% of the search market. How much does the search engine cost? Zero, right? Because they figured out an algorithm and a way to build, you know, at other business revenue around their freemium offering, right? And you're like, wow, these guys must be smart. They know something we don't, so they dominate the search market. Walmart is the same thing. They're the cheapest, and they are the expert, right? But then you look at Tesla and Jaguar and Maserati and, the New York Yankees and Rolex and, you know, pick any ultra-luxury brand in any niche. The top skateboard, the top game, the top, you know, you name it. I mean, look, if you would have told me 10 years ago, I would pay $1,200 for a cell phone, I would have told you you were crazy. Who the hell in their right mind would spend $1,200 on a cell phone, but you and I both have one?
Yeah.
And we can't wait for the next one to come out so we can spend $1,500. And, you know, there's more iPhone 8s and more iPhone X's and Galaxy Note 8 and 8 Plus and all than there are the cheap phones being sold. They're selling as many of the premiums as there are the smaller ones, you know, because they're thought of as being better quality.
We could definitely see it in all the different brands out there that seem to be dominating for our attention and for the extra money that we save up. And it's either a really low priced offer or a really high priced offer. And it's definitely better to go for the high priced offer because like $100 an hour consultant has to serve 10 clients to make $1,000 while $1,000 per hour just has to serve one client for the same time. So higher prices definitely seems like the better route on the way towards making it as an entrepreneur. But when we do get to that point where we've made it and we're at the long haul now, keeping what we've built, you mentioned letting go and delegating. So when we do have those teams around us, what should we be constantly applying on our teams? Like, what are the actions and strategies that we should be implementing in order to get better results as business owners and for our teams?
Yeah, it's a good question because when you've hit the point where you're in for the long haul, your company becomes everything you said it never would become when you first started, right? You worked for somebody else and you said, I can't stand the rules here. I'm going to have a place where we don't have rules. I'm never going to have all this follow up and dashboards and, you know, all this, you know, most entrepreneurs started a business either because of a dream or because of an argument. Right. But it was rarely because they did market research and studied the, you know, potential. That's not, you know, we read about some of those entrepreneurs, but that's not most of them. Most of them, it's they're passionate about something. And they got into an argument with somebody who told them they couldn't do something, or they had a dream of always doing something. But they left where the confines of a place where they had a lot of rules. And now they finally made it. Right. They've gotten to a certain point. They're getting a certain amount of success. And your business goes from this, Mark. It goes from friends selling to friends to strangers selling to strangers. And so when you are friends selling to friends, you do a good job for a client. They become a friend. They give you a word of mouth referral to one of their friends. You do a job for that person. You become their friend. You are friends selling to friends. But when you want to scale your business, you have to become strangers selling to strangers, which means you have to hire somebody you never met before who's going to go do a job or find prospects that they've never met before. So you're a stranger selling to strangers. And when you are strangers selling to strangers, you have to have systems and rules and follow up and follow through and enforcement. And that is counterintuitive sometimes to the entrepreneur who started out as a maverick and said, oh, that's never going to be me. You're never going to catch me doing that. Total role reversal, because in the beginning they said, let's stick it to the man. I'm out of here. But now you are the man or the woman. And you know, you're only sticking it to yourself. If you don't comply, you're sabotaging your own set of rules. So they have to become more rules and structure and at least framework driven. And they have to develop that skill of follow up and follow through, which goes along with delegation. I'm going to hand you something to do, but I am going to follow up. And here's my follow through process. We're using this app or this calendar or this meeting or this process map, you name it. But here's what I expect. And your results are going to go up on that dashboard. And if the results are, you know, the font turns red instead of green, then you're in trouble. You have plenty to be worried about. And if it turns green, we've got a lot to celebrate, you know. But you have to become that person where it's not as much about the product anymore. It's about the process.
And I mean, as you go through the process of being an entrepreneur, things that your whole approach will change as you go on. And one of the things with entrepreneurs is we're constantly setting new goals for us, trying to reach our full potential, but not all entrepreneurs seem to be reaching that potential. So what do you think holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
You know, it's part of its nature and part of its nurture. The nature part, Mark, is that you know, their ego just gets in the way, or they can't let go. Most entrepreneurs are control freaks. They can't let go, and the business has to be about them. I mean, all the way up to Steve Jobs, you know, with Apple. I mean, the business had to be about him, you know. Now, he happened to be the Thomas Edison of our time, and he was a genius. So that worked well for the company, but it didn't, you know, Bill Gates, it didn't have to be about Bill Gates. He just, you know, he didn't care about that, you know. Now, but there's plenty of ways to get there, but where we see most entrepreneurs screw up is when they can't let their ego get out of the way and they can't let their team shine, succeed, you know, even greater than they do, and them be the focus. You know, so that's the nature part. The nurture part is, look, you know, most entrepreneurs don't realize that your passion for your product and the skill to deliver that product and the management of the scalable systems are two totally different skill sets, and they're opposing skill sets. So oftentimes what makes you really good as an operator makes you very poor as a manager and vice versa, you know. The top athletes you've ever seen on TV, they rarely become good coaches. Rarely. Because a player on the field isn't observing the whole game. They're just, they're doing their part, right? Some better than others, but their area of focus is different. Take the top coaches in any field anywhere. They probably weren't the top, with a few exceptions. They weren't the top players. They were usually borderline players who were very observant of the overall game. So the nurture part is the conditioning. A lot of entrepreneurs just don't have the skill set for management. You know, scaling, growing your business, going from zero to like $1 million is not hard. Staying there is hard. Managing growth is a lot harder than getting the growth in the first place. Even though some of your listeners are saying, well, I'll take the growth. I'll figure that out when I get there. You probably will. But the reality is that it's a lot harder. And most people think, well, I'll just sell my way out of the problem. They don't. They normally sell their way into their problem. And because they are, building the systems and the processes and the day in, day out disciplines is not always as sexy as the growth side. You know, just because you did your huddle this morning, they don't put you on the cover of Inc. magazine. All right. But if you know, I just saw some movie last night where some guy got entrepreneurial, made millions of dollars, then got caught by the government and lost millions of dollars and then got the millions back. And I mean, such a roller coaster ride. They make movies about that, but they don't make movies about the guy who just the lady who gets up at 9 o'clock, does their job, you know, follows the process and goes home that next day and then does it over again. You know, that's not the sexy part of business, but it is the scalable and it is the much more profitable part of business.
And it's interesting how you mentioned it's harder to hold on to the growth once you obtain it. And I think part of the reason it's hard is also because people start to expect more of it from you. Like if you post like income reports, people are going to check on you every month. They're going to expect you to hit a certain income. So you have more eyes watching you also once you achieve that growth. But on our way towards growth, we're going to face certain challenges along the way. So Carl, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
So, one of the things I'm probably most proud of in my business life was in 1996, I was in my construction company and I realized it wasn't my passion. And I decided to get into coaching and speaking and consulting when the industry was nothing like it is today. In other words, the job I have today didn't exist back then. And I took the plunge and re-engineered my life and still went for it. And I launched the business that I have today in 2002. So 2001, I should say. Probably the biggest thing, from an operational standpoint that I've done as an entrepreneur was utilizing my team smart. Like one of the things I've learned well is how to delegate. And I just get, because I've adapted the skill of training and mentoring and delegating and teaching people how to do, not all of what I do, but parts of what I do in some cases, I'm able to duplicate myself. So anytime I could bring somebody on the team, teach them what I do, or teach them a function in the job, I've duplicated myself. And so my goal is to, have 1,000, then 1,000,000, people that are out there, following our system. And every time I do that, I get to duplicate myself. So those are the two things that stand out for me as just really areas that I think I've made my impact.
And that ability to duplicate yourself so that you're able to get more done and spread your message is a very powerful ability to have, where you have people who are able to help you out with that. And one of the questions that I would like to transition to, this is a question that is based on me being a bookworm and a lot of other people reading books also. So Carl, what are three great books that you believe would help us grow our businesses to the next level?
Well, I could tell you two books I'm reading right now that I think your listeners would love. One is called The Machine. And it's a great book on how to segment your sales process. The other one is called the Sales Acceleration Formula. I would definitely check those two out. And entrepreneurs, so the rest of your life doesn't flame out in a way, you know, doesn't crash and burn because of your business success. Check out the book by Jim Shields called The Family Board Meeting. Those would be three books right now that I'd highly recommend. Shows you how to run an entrepreneurial family and use, you know, a traditional business board meeting as a family style meeting. It's a pretty cool book.
That definitely sounds like an interesting idea. And those three book recommendations are really great and definitely going to help us achieve more as we go into the new year. Granted, this is coming out at the end of February, but as we go towards our goals. But before we conclude, I would like to flip the tables a little bit. So what is one question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Good question. How can I service my client at an even deeper level than I already do right now? How can I invade their privacy in my area of business, in my particular, not literally in every area of their life, but in the area of their life that I am relevant to? How can I invade their privacy, communicate with them more, and engage with them at an even deeper level and take away one more sleepless night that they have right now?
Carl, I absolutely love that question, and it seems to be the crux of everything else happening within this interview, where it's just a focus on the client, a focus on serving them better. And that is a great question to ask ourselves and also a great way to cap this interview.
Oh, great. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
All right, Breakthrough Success listeners, if you want to learn more about Carl and follow what he's doing, you can head over to carlgould.com, gold, G-O-U-L-D, and you can get a free coaching session also, a business analysis, where you'll learn about five distinct growth strategies for your businesses. It's up to 2 hours for a coaching session. This is 100% free. Just contact him on his site. Let him know that you want the free coaching session business analysis. And that's the offer that Carl has graciously provided for us. I highly recommend you utilize it if you want your business to soar. Carl, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Thanks so much for having me. And I hope this has been beneficial. You know, I've had the real privilege and blessing to grow three businesses that have topped $1 million. And I hope the same for your listeners. And I hope some of the things I shared today help them along that path.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgoberti.com/retweet.